This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live.
Are we a profession? That's what we are talking about today. We are looking at the definition of professionalism, what it means to be a professional, and whether we as teachers fall into that category.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
A very good morning to you. It is Saturday, the 6th of April, 2024. We are coming to the end of what is for many people the final week of the Easter holidays. So anybody who is going back to school on Monday, the very best of luck to you. For many other people, this is, of course, the end of the first full week, and they still have a week to go. So please do make sure that if you've still got a week off, you are enjoying that. It is a drizzly overcast day here in Gloucestershire. You know that I do enjoy that. This is my favourite type of weather, when we are kind of cloudy and windy and drizzly and just dramatic. I like the dramatic weather, I think is the best way to put it. I'm not going to go with too much preamble today, because I think I've got a lot to talk about. You know that normally I like to do a fair bit of preamble before we go into the news, and then we get down to the meat of the show. But I think I want to jump straight into the meat today. I may regret that if I don't actually have 90 minutes worth of content to talk to you about today, but I guess we will know that when we see how long the show has ended up running for. But I want to talk today about professionalism, about the concept of professionalism, about what it means to be a professional, and about whether we as teachers fit that bill. And this has all kind of come from these ideas that I haven't been able to let go over the past kind of 36-ish hours. Now, if any of you follow me on Twitter, I am at Mr. D. Lester, that's MrDLester, over on Twitter. You will know that it came to my attention on Thursday evening, actually via a Twitter Spaces show that we host here, that one of the teaching unions gave over time at a fringe meeting during a conference to discuss geopolitics, to discuss war, to discuss kind of wider world issues. And I was not very happy about that. I was not very happy about that at all. I have no idea what side the union came down on in the discussion about war. I didn't make it that far, which I thought was quite interesting, because one of the comments that I saw on Twitter around this issue was something along the lines of, oh, imagine being upset that somebody is anti-war. I didn't even make it that far to find out what the position was. For me, it wasn't about the politics of what they were discussing, although that may have been an issue for many people. For me, it was the fact that one of our unions, who, you know, pride themselves on fighting for what is best for teachers, and, you know, who do a very good job. I'm not here to disparage unions. I'm not here to downplay the work that they do, because the unions do very good work. But for me, it was the fact that they had this meeting space available. They had people available for meetings to meet. They had teachers there. And instead of picking up on one of the myriad of issues that surrounds the teaching profession, one of the many, many things that that we talk about on a day-to-day basis, you know, here at Teachers Talk Radio, we wouldn't have shows without these issues. You know, in our classrooms, in our staff rooms, on our teaching social media, everywhere, we are talking about the things that are important to us as teachers. And I couldn't get past the fact that one of our unions was taking up space and taking that space away from educational issues out into a broader geopolitical issue. Now, again, I am going to clarify that these are important things to talk about. You know, there are wars going on. These things do need to be resolved. There should be spaces given over to the resolution of these issues. My complaint is that an educational conference is not the right venue for these issues. And that if you are touting yourself as an education union, as a teachers union, as an enterprise, a business, let's be honest, because they take our money in terms of our subscription fees, our union dues, whatever you want to call them. And your business model is we are representing teachers. I feel like your sole focus should be on teaching and education, particularly when there are so many different issues in the profession that are in play. And I've kind of sat with this over the last 36 hours. And I've actually found it really difficult. I've found it really difficult to feel like one of our professional bodies, it felt like we were being disrespected by them. And I realize that that's kind of a ridiculous thing to say because, you know, there were other fringe meetings happening at the same time at this same conference, you know, that were about education. I've kind of seen the tweets about them. I've seen the conference schedule, all of that. So I know that there were educational issues being discussed. I just find it really difficult to get over the fact that such a large forum and such glee was taken in this idea of discussing something that was not about education. And it took me a little while to realize why I was so angry about it. And it comes down to something that I learnt on my last doctoral weekend. So just in case you are not a regular listener of the show, because I do talk about this quite a lot, so I apologize to those of you who are friends of the show and so know all about my doctoral journey. I am currently doing my EdD at the University of Reading. And one of the modules that we are studying this year is called Professionalism in the 21st Century. It's a really interesting module. And one of the aspects of professionalism, and we will talk about this a lot more kind of after the news when we get down to the nitty-gritty of what it means to be professional. But one of the aspects of professionalism, one of the criteria that makes something a profession rather than a job, according to our professor, according to all of the research that he had done, is this idea of having a professional body that represents your interests and that kind of governs you. Now, in England, we used to have the General Teaching Council. That doesn't exist anymore. I'm not going to lie, I am quite happy about that because I always used to resent paying my subscription to them as well as my union fees because I felt like I was paying out quite a lot of money just to do my job, particularly when I was a newly qualified teacher and so right at the bottom of the pay scale. It quite often felt like I was paying more money to do my job than I was actually earning from doing my job. But we, you know, that doesn't exist anymore. We don't have the GTCE anymore. And so in England specifically, that's the context that I teach in. It's the country that I know best. And for those of you who are international listeners outside of the UK and so may not know, education in the UK is entirely devolved. So each of the constituent countries has autonomy, has its own control over its own education. So in this instance, I can't even speak for the wider UK. I can only speak to England. But we kind of are in a position where our unions are pretty much the only professional body that exists to represent us. And so if we then have our unions saying that there are not enough issues in education to warrant all of the time that they have, all of the space that they have, and so they're going to talk about something different, or we have our representative body suggesting that they feel that there are more pressing issues than what's going on in education, it's very easy for us then to feel undermined. I felt undermined as a professional by the choice that was made, because I felt that the body that is supposed to represent me was saying, you know, the concerns that exist within education, the concerns that exist within the classroom, they're not important enough to fill a whole conference. They're not important enough for us to give all of our time to. And so we're going to give a time to this, I'm going to call it a fringe issue, only because it's a fringe issue in terms of education. And we're going to give time to that. And as someone who believes very much in education, I was upset by that. And I think I tweeted out, you know, how can we expect the wider world to take us seriously? How can we expect parents, the government, the kids in our classroom to take us seriously as professionals when our own professional bodies are not always putting our issues at the fore? And again, I'm not saying that people who are involved in unions, who run these meetings, shouldn't be interested in wider political affairs, because they absolutely should. We should all be interested in everything. You know me, I'm a deep knowledge generalist. I believe in being interested in a range of things, because I think that's how you make knowledge. I think you make knowledge by making connections between all sorts of different things that exist in the world. But if you are hosting an educational conference for teachers, and you are a professional body that represents teachers, I feel like that should be the sole focus, quite honestly. But having said all that, I'm kind of glad that I've been sent down this little rabbit warren of professionalism, because it will probably be quite useful for my class the next time we all come together to meet as EdD students, the next time I have a lecture. And because it has led me to start thinking, well, actually, what does it mean to be a professional? What does it mean to be a professional person? What is the difference between having a profession and having a job? Is there a difference? What's the difference between job, profession, career, vocation? You know, I'm a language person, so I believe that while there are synonyms, if we have a different word for something, it's because it does mean something different, even if that difference is semantic, even if that difference is slight. So I spent some time researching this, looking into what it means to be professional, what it means to have a profession, because the other thing I wanted to figure out was whether I was being unfair. You know, is my over-literal belief in teaching as a profession, is my over-literal belief in supporting teachers, is that unfair because I believe that being a profession is something different? And so I've been quite excited over the last couple of days to explore this, to think about this, to do a lot of reading, as I always do, to do one of my shallow dives. And that's kind of what I'm going to share with you today. I'm going to share my own learning, my professional learning, with you today. If you have any comments on anything that we discussed today, you have got a few ways to get in touch. If you are listening live via Podbean, you can always text in. I am more than happy to read your messages out on air and discuss those with you. If you are listening live elsewhere, not on Podbean, you are welcome to tweet me. Once again, I am at Mr. D. Lester. That's MrDLester, all one word. I have got Twitter open in a tab. And so again, I am happy to read your tweets, to engage with those. If you are listening on playback, you are very, very welcome. I do love when people listen on playback, particularly being here on a Saturday morning, because I realize that 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning is not necessarily when everybody wants to be thinking about teaching, even if I do. And so once again, you are more than welcome to engage with me on Twitter if you are listening through a playback. It may not be 9 a.m. for you anymore. It may be later on in the afternoon. It may not be the 6th of April for you anymore. You might be listening later in the week. It may not be 2024 for you anymore. We know that nothing on the internet disappears. We keep telling that to our pupils during online safety discussions. And so you could be listening to this at any point in time. But as I always say, I pick my shows based on things that I am interested in. I kind of use my platform, I think, as my own CPD. I quite often say that doing this show is the best CPD I've ever had, because I take things that I'm interested in and I read about them and I share them with you. And so if I've done a show on something, it means that I am interested in it and I will probably always be interested in it. So even though we are now 15 years in the future, assuming that I'm still teaching, you can still text in and tell me your opinion on what it means to be a professional. Oh, I thought I was going to be so smooth there with my transition into the ads and the news, but it didn't work quite as I wanted. Let's try again.
This show is brought to you in partnership with John Catt Educational, publishing professional development books and resources to support great teaching and learning in schools around the world. Have you checked out their latest releases? Use the code JCTTR2324 for 20% off your order. Don't miss out. Visit johncattbookshop.com to explore their full range of titles and advance your own professional development today. Happy reading.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
You are listening to Teachers Talk Radio News, and here is a roundup of some of the main stories over the past 7 days. On the eve of the National Education Unions Conference, which runs in Bournemouth from the 3rd to the 6th of April, it looks increasingly as though a ballot on strike action will be taken. An indicative ballot, in which over half the members of the union participated, showed 9 in 10 in favour of a ballot on strike action. Daniel Kabedi, General Secretary of the union, indicated that if conference votes in favour of strike action, it will be serving notice to this government and future governments rather than ensuring that strikes did happen. However, he also outlined his belief in the gravity of the current crisis facing education in an interview with Radio 4's Today programme.
There is a mood of desperation, if we're being honest. The profession is very much on its knees. Morale is at an all-time low. And of course, we can see that in the crisis in recruitment and retention. 9% of the teaching profession left the profession last year prior to retirement. The government is continually missing its recruitment targets for new teachers. We missed it by 50% for secondary teachers this year. Quite simply, if we continue on this direction of travel, education will grind to a halt.
Other teachers' unions, including the NASUWT, have indicated they will not be holding a ballot on strike action. However, Patrick Roach, General Secretary of the NASUWT, has called for the replacement of the School Teachers' Pay Review Body, or the Independent Pay Review Body as it is known, with a teacher's pay commission, stating that the current pay review body is not independent, since its remit is set by the government and its members chosen by the government. And this year, the pay review body has been told by the government that it must set a pay level lower than last year and focus on shortage subjects. In other news, this week Amanda Spielman gave her first interview since leaving as head of Ofsted. On the Difficult Women podcast, she was asked by interviewer Rachel Johnson, while reflecting on her career, about the death of Ruth Perry. Much loved and dedicated head teacher Ruth Perry had committed suicide after an Ofsted inspection, which the coroner had characterised as brutal and insensitive. Spielman said that the inspection had been carried out exactly as it should be. There was nothing wrong with the inspection, but, she noted sadly, it is at times difficult to tell people tough messages. And she compared the Ofsted process with its single word, judgments, as being similar to a driving test, which no one likes to fail. This week, the website Teacher Tap, which regularly carries out surveys into teachers' attitudes and opinions, surveyed teachers' reaction to the Dame Sarah Kahn report into threats to public cohesion, in which she'd suggested the possibility of exclusion zones around schools of 150 metres. This came in reaction to groups of parents demonstrating outside schools in reaction to what they perceived as insults to religion among the staff. 58% of teachers surveyed thought this was a good idea. 48%, though, said yes, but the exclusion zones should not exclude teachers' unions or striking teachers. In another Teacher Tap survey this week, the website reported that over 20% of teachers had seen evidence of cheating using artificial intelligence. This was up from 6% last year. Teachers' views were also surveyed in an NASUWT poll that was reported in the Independent newspaper. In a survey of thousands of teachers, 9 out of 10 stated that stress and workload had had an adverse effect on their mental health, and 12% said they used alcohol to cope. In some powerful interviews, other teachers described vomiting before work and having cried at work in reaction to student behaviour and stress. This follows the widely reported news item on the BBC, which said that 1 in 5 teachers in England had been hit by a pupil in the previous year, and teachers reporting that spitting, swearing, and chair throwing were happening often. This week, the website Education Uncovered, led by the investigative reporter Warwick Mansell, reported the story of Sir Paul Marshall, chair of the ARC Schools Academy Trust. Sir Paul, multi-millionaire hedge fund manager and co-owner of GB News, was reported by the organisation Hope Not Hate, which confronts hate speech in the media, as having retweeted, either casually or thoughtfully, a number of the most extreme Islamophobic and homophobic tweets. Union members at ARC Schools have called for him to resign, as no longer fit and proper to be associated with education. And Labour MP Sam Tarry has urged the ARC Trust to sever links with Sir Paul. So far, they are standing by him. And finally, in a widely reported story which appeared in The Guardian and on the BBC and in the Independent newspaper, parents at a Boyne primary school in Aberdeenshire were furious after the photographer, Tempest Photography, issued 2 sets of photographs of the children. One, where the pupils with additional needs had been removed. Parents received an apology from the local council which said the decision had not been taken by the school and the link to the photographs had been removed. This has been your Teachers Talk Radio news for this week. You can find archived interviews of Daniel Kabidi, the General Secretary of the NEU, in-depth discussion and analysis of the role of Ofsted in many past Teachers Talk Radio programmes, as well as the weekly teacher review on Sunday mornings on YouTube. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, John, and I cannot think of a more apt new segment to have in a show than that one in our show today. Isn't it interesting that we hear about all of these teachers having such extreme issues with their mental health, which, you know, is something that we take very, very seriously here, not just on Saturday Morning Breakfast, but on Teachers Talk Radio in general. And the unions are seeing, they are acknowledging, they are discussing in interviews the fact that there are all kinds of crises going on in education. So, you know, these issues are not unknown to them. And yet, they are taking time during conferences to discuss things that have nothing to do with education. I think it's really important for us to keep in mind, kind of as we make decisions, I suppose, about our careers, about our futures, about what teaching is, what teaching means, to think about our own values, to think about what we want, what we believe teaching should be, and to make sure that we are supporting bodies, that we are supporting schools, that we are supporting individuals who align with our own values. I did a show a couple of weeks ago on Generation Alpha, and I talked about how, you know, they are a very individualistic generation. They are a generation who know what they want and they will kind of go after what they want. I was reading just this morning the same thing being said about Generation Z, who are about to overtake the baby boomers in the workplace. So what we will find over the next few years is, as our boomer generation colleagues begin to retire, we will have more Generation Z, more younger ECTs coming up and coming through. And what is quite interesting to note about that, of course, is that they are, again, as I've just said, a generation who take values very seriously, who will look for workplaces that align with their values. And so, you know, the value of education, the value of schools, the professionalism of teachers will all be things that current trainees and the current either undergrads who might be going on to do a PGCE or A-level students who are thinking about going into teacher training, they will be thinking about these things to make sure that their professional and personal values align. And so I think as a profession, I'm aware that I am using this word before I've even decided whether teaching is a profession yet, before I even told you about any of the research that I have done over this week. We need to kind of be clear on what our values are, be clear on what we are doing, on what our mission is. Otherwise, our recruitment is going to get worse, not because of pupil behavior, not because of pay, not because of workload, not because of any of the things that we are currently putting it down to, but because we are too wishy-washy on what we are trying to do, and because people, you know, potential colleagues won't see whether or not our values as teachers align with their values as individuals. So let's think about this idea of professionalism. Are we a profession? Now, I remember sitting in my lecture about this, and my gut reaction was, of course we're a profession. Obviously we're a profession. Why wouldn't we be? Why are we having this lecture? Why are we asking this question? And I can imagine that some of you listening may have had the same gut reaction to what I said before the news. But let's have a think about what professions actually are, about what it means to be a profession. Now, as I've already said, my professor, Alan, he said that one of the primary distinctives of a profession, one of the ways to decide whether something is a profession or a job, is that a profession has a professional body, something, an entity that is not government controlled. So we can't look to Ofsted for this in teaching, that is run by or predominantly run by members of that profession in order to regulate it. Now, once again, as I said before the news, in England, we no longer have the General Teaching Council. So we don't have what was always the de facto body that was kind of in charge of the chalk face running of education. And so when we were talking about this at uni, I said, well, you know, we've got the unions. The unions are there. They are run by teachers. They represent teachers' best interests. You know, they are the closest thing that we have to this kind of professional body that I'm being told we need in order to be a profession. And I think, you know, my reasoning for that, I still stand by. I still think my reasoning for that is solid. And I think that's one of the reasons that my reaction to the Fringe meeting about the war on the other day was as strong as it was. Because again, in my head, the union is something that helps us to define ourselves as a profession. They kind of feed into that narrative of professionalism just by their existence. And again, as I said on Twitter, if we can't rely on the body that is representing us as a profession, if we can't rely on the body that is saying they are for teachers, working in the best interest of teachers, if we can't rely on them to take us seriously, how can we rely on anybody else to take us seriously? If we can't rely on them to prioritize us and to say there are so many issues that, you know, we don't have enough meetings to discuss all of them, but instead say, you know, oh, well, you know, there are issues, but actually talking about a war is more important to us. How is anyone else going to take us seriously? So for me, currently, that is one strike against the idea of us being a profession, because I don't see where we have any kind of body of people who are focused on representing us as teachers in our profession, in our jobs, who look out for our best interests. And now again, I am speaking purely from an England-centric point of view here, because that's where I'm based, that's where I'm practicing. So I then started to look up definitions of profession. I looked into the research. I looked into what other people say define a profession, because surely it can't just be about having a professional body. So Halliday said, a profession is an occupation with a set of competency based on knowledge acquired through many years of academic training. The goal of its members being a committed to service guided by a code of ethics. It requires formal qualification, mastery of skills, specialized knowledge, and prolonged training. So I reflected on my own practice. I have got a BEd. I trained in primary before making the switch to secondary. I've got an MEd. I am currently doing an educational doctorate. So for me personally, yes, I can say that I have knowledge acquired through many years of academic training, and that training is ongoing. You know, I believe very much, as you know, if you are a regular listener to Saturday Morning Breakfast, I believe very much in CPD. I believe very much in professional and personal development, in PPD. And so I hope that I will go on learning about our job, about pedagogy, about the best ways to teach for a very long time, even after I've retired, if I get to retire. So yes, that is a tick for us. You know, we have knowledge acquired through years of academic training. Many of you who are listening, who are secondary colleagues, you went through your first degree in your subject, you then did your PGCE, or you did your workplace training, whatever that might be, and there were academic components to that. However, I think however is going to be my favorite word in the show today. We know that the government is touting this idea of a teaching apprenticeship coming in, where you can take the route into teaching that is usually used for vocational professions, for things like plumbing and carpentry and being an electrician. My eldest nephew is doing an apprenticeship currently in or to become an electrician. And those are hard jobs. Those are skilled jobs. You know, there are things that I could not do. If I attempted to rewire my house would burn down probably before I even finished trying to do the first room. You know, so I am absolutely not undermining those professions and what they do. Those men and women are very skilled in their jobs. They are much more competent at their jobs than I am, and they are worth the money that we pay them. But my nephew's training, his academic training, is in lieu of A-levels. So it is in place of his doing the qualifications that we do in the UK when we are 17 and 18 years old. And if the teaching apprenticeship follows that same model, then it's going to be the same thing. So we could end up with teachers who haven't had to go through university in order to get their qualification, and at the same time haven't even had to finish off the level of education that their pupils might be taking. Now, I don't know enough about the proposed apprenticeships to kind of come down one way or the other to have an opinion. I do want to learn about them, because I am interested in initial teacher training. I am interested in professional development. And so one of my kind of goals for this quarter actually is to learn more about these propositions, to learn more about what actually will be involved with these apprenticeships. But if they become a legitimate pathway into the profession, can we then still say that we are an occupation with a set of competencies based on knowledge acquired through many years of academic training, when in fact many of our teachers will have completed the equivalent of finishing off their mandatory schooling? Because if we can't say that anymore, that's another strike against us, against the idea of us being a profession. However, professions are skilled. A professional is a skilled practitioner. We have a specific set of skills. And you have to assume that any kind of apprenticeship in teaching would involve some form of pedagogical training. Because you can't teach if you don't understand what teaching is about. You can't teach if you don't understand how people learn. So they will still have those skills. They will still be skilled practitioners. And we all know that you become more skilled in teaching as you become more experienced. We all know that it is important to have that balance between a theoretical understanding of the pedagogy and classroom practice. It's why people so often get annoyed when consultants come in to INSET who maybe have never been teachers or have been out of the classroom already for 15 years and tell them how to teach. You know, it's a common criticism that these people are not the chalk face anymore. They don't understand it. They don't understand what the profession is like. So we all come into teaching as novices. We all come into teaching as being far less experienced than many, many of our colleagues. And that experience grows as we teach. Those skills get better as we teach. So it may be that these years of academic, the academic training, I had to double check what the wording was there. It may be that it doesn't matter if those go away. It may be that we can still be considered a profession if that's not a requirement anymore, because we still have this specialist set of skills. Profession is the phenomenon of vital activity created by division of labor that social, economical, and technological factors require. That is from Yogita Vyas, who is a teacher trainer in India. I try to go worldwide with this, even though I'm focused in the English context. I try to find out what lots of different societies say about the professionalism of teaching. So profession is a phenomenon of vital activity created by the division of labor that social, economical, and technological factors require. In other words, as the old adage goes, teaching is the profession that creates other professions. And again, that's very true. That's very true, because if a profession is knowledge acquired through many years of academic training, then they require teachers. You know, my nephew doing his apprenticeship as an electrician, he has teachers. He has teachers in his on his college days when he goes in and he does the theoretical part of his apprenticeship. He has teachers when he is at work, when he's on the job, when he is rewiring people's houses far more successfully than I could ever dream. And so those teachers are creating his profession. They are in a profession that is creating his. It is a vital activity, because without a teacher, you're not going to know how to do anything. And, you know, again, this is where we can get caught up in semantics. This is where we can talk about the difference between teachers and mentors and guides and whatever else we might want to call them. But ultimately, this boils down to this idea that in order for there to be any profession at all, in order for there to be any job at all, you need a teacher. This is true of teachers, but professions render an essential social service. So when we tend to think of the professions, and if we go back historically to what were the historical professions, we have got law, we have got theology. So they are the social services. They were, back in the 1400s, the 1500s, the essential services in order to function in society. And you can absolutely argue that teaching renders an essential social service. Whatever you think is the purpose of a teacher, whatever you think is the purpose of a school, if you think a school is there for knowledge, if you think a school is there for childcare, if you think a school is there for facilitating and ameliorating the mental health of children, whatever you put schools down to, they are rendering this essential social service. So that's another tick in us being a profession. It demands continuous in-service training of its members. Yes, teaching absolutely does. We have inset days. We are encouraged to go on courses. We are encouraged to do our CPD. Okay. Pastor Jay Zima, I hope I pronounced that correctly, has texted in that you have missed the first half of the show. That's completely okay. That is not a problem. I'm glad that you have joined us now. I'm really happy to have you here. If you are interested in the first half of the show, you can always go back and listen on the catch up. All of our shows are put out again as podcasts once the show is over. So you are welcome to go back and catch up. But honestly, you have come in at a very good point to join in the discussion. So I'm glad to have you here. So yeah, as teachers, we do, or we should, constantly go through professional development. So that's a tick in terms of us being a profession. It has a clearly defined membership of a particular group with a view to safeguarding the interests of the profession. This is something that we're going to talk about in more detail in a few minutes on the show, because we're going to talk about the teaching standards, because those are kind of what are the defined membership criteria that view to safeguard the interests of the profession. But tick, yes, we have that. It involves a code of ethics. Again, that's the teaching standards. So tick, we have that. And it assures its members a professional career. Now, that one is interesting, isn't it? Because again, that comes down to the semantics. Anything will assure its members a professional career if you determine it to be a profession. So we're going to kind of ignore that criterion for now. So we do tick a lot of the boxes to be a profession. But we also don't tick all of them. And so I guess it boils down to, do you need to meet every criterion, in order to be something? Do we need to have all of the criteria of being a profession in order to be one? Or is it enough just to have most of them? And I think, as with anything when it comes down to semantics and definitions, that is to do with the views, the values, the ideas of the people inside the organization. As teachers, do we want to be a profession? Do we want to be considered professionals? Is it enough for us to tick most of the boxes, but not all of them? And you know what? I'm going to go ahead and say no in this case. I don't think it is enough. And the reason that I don't think it is enough is because of the teacher's standards. We are rightly held to very high standards as teachers. For those of you who are outside of my context, and so might not understand what the teacher standards in England are. They are, as they suggest, a list of standards outlined by the government that you must meet at, theoretically, at all stages of your career. But you kind of have to make sure that you sign yourself off against them at different stages. So when you are first training, in order to qualify initially as a teacher, you have to be able to demonstrate that you have met all of the teaching standards over your practice. If you want to move through the different pay thresholds, you have to apply for that and show that you have met the standards throughout your career. But in theory, we're expected to uphold all of the standards all of the time. And so because we have these standards, because we are being told this is what you have to do in order to be a teacher, we've got these expectations of us. I believe that we should be given something back. We should have that organization that looks out for our best interests. I don't think it's enough that we tick all of the other boxes because we've got these very stringent standards to which we are held. So the preamble to the teacher standards say, teachers make the education of their pupils their first concern and are accountable for achieving the highest possible standards in work and conduct. Teachers act with honesty and integrity, have strong subject knowledge, keep their knowledge and skills as teachers up to date and are self-critical. They forge positive professional relationships and they work with parents in the best interests of their pupils. So those are not obviously all of the standards to which we hold ourselves, but those, if we had to sum up the standards, it's that, it's the preamble. Okay. And I agree with all of that. I agree that that's what the profession should be. Putting our pupils first, being accountable for achieving the highest standards in our work and conduct, not being accountable for pupil results, because that's down to whether the pupils have studied, that's down to the amount of effort that they put in, but certainly being accountable for our own work, having honesty and integrity, keeping our subject knowledge up to date, because you can't teach something if you don't know it, reflecting on our own practice, having positive professional relationships with people, and at all times keeping the best interests of the pupil at the foundation, at the center of what we do. But that's a lot. That's a lot for us to be concerned with. That's a lot for us to be held against. And if we then don't have this body, this group that is looking out for our best interests, that is separate from the government, so it doesn't get caught up in the wider politics, that is focused on making sure that teachers are safe in their job, making sure that teachers are happy in their work, making sure that pupils are thriving because they have got the best teachers that they can have, because the teachers are being adequately, properly supported. If we don't have that, it makes it harder for us to meet all of our standards because we're on our own. And for me, I guess that's what separates a profession from a job. A profession is about the wider group. It's about this idea of us all having shared interests as teachers, despite the fact that we might have different priorities. You know, my priority is and always has been subject knowledge. My priority, you know, I will forever say I am a language teacher. My priority is making sure that my students are conversant in French, Hebrew, Latin, Chinese, whatever it is I might be teaching them. Whereas other people will say, oh no, well, I'm a maths teacher, but my priority is the mental health of pupils. Or, oh, I'm a PE teacher, my priority is nutrition and making sure that school dinners are balanced and all of that. We may have differing individual priorities, but as a profession, as a group, we all have the same priority of making our pupils our first concern. And as a group, we are able to holistically meet the needs of our pupils, even if as individuals we can't, because we don't have all the same knowledge, we don't have all the same skills. And I do think currently that is what we are missing. And I do think we would be stronger as a profession. I think we would be able to be taken more seriously as a profession if we did have that body, if we did have that group of people who were committed to using their resources when they were under that banner of that professional body to talk about educational issues. So with the teaching standards, we have two parts. There is part one, which lists a whole range of very concrete, very meetable, evidenceable standards. Okay, it's things like, you know, marking, being up to date with the requirements of the curriculum, homeschool agreements and contact, all of that sort of thing. Then we have part two, and part two is much vaguer. I remember spending hours as a trainee when I was doing we had to keep what was called a professional development profile, a PDP. Where we were keeping evidence of all of our standards so that they could give us qualified teacher status. I remember spending hours agonizing over how to evidence part two, because part two is much more woolly. Part two is about how we behave in our personal lives. And basically, it says a teacher is expected to demonstrate consistently high standards of personal and professional conduct. So again, the standards are calling us professionals, even if we're not ticking all of the boxes, and we're being held to these standards. So we are being considered professionals, even if we don't necessarily have all of the support that other professions have. And so I got to thinking about what it means to act professionally. Because, you know, again, that's another one of my interests, is this idea of the teacher identity, the teacher persona. How is Darren different to Mr. Lester? And so I've been thinking about kind of to what extent is professionalism performative? To what extent is professionalism what you let people see? And part two can then be broken down. And there are 7 different areas that I've been able to break this down into. We've got treating pupils and other adults with dignity, building relationships rooted in mutual respect, and observing correct boundaries appropriate to a teacher's professional position. Having regard for the need to safeguard pupils' well-being in accordance with statutory provisions. Showing tolerance and respect for the rights of other people. Not undermining the fundamental British values, which include democracy, the rule of law, individual liberty and mutual respect, and tolerance of those with different faiths and beliefs. That's been a big one, particularly lately. That's been something that inspectors have really been looking out for during inspections. Ensuring that personal beliefs are not expressed in ways which exploit pupils' vulnerability or might lead them to break the law. Having proper professional regard for the ethos, policies and practices of the specific school in which they teach, and maintaining high standards in their own attendance and punctuality. Having an understanding of and always acting within the statutory frameworks which set out their professional duties and responsibilities. So that's kind of how we uphold those high standards of ethics and behaviour, both in and out of school. So again, it's not just what you are doing when you are in work. It's not just what you are doing when you have got your tie on and you have got your purple pen and are marking your books. It's also what you are doing outside of school. So we are held to professional standards at all times. You know, we have to comport ourselves, we have to conduct ourselves outside of school in a manner befitting of teachers. In a manner that upholds the stereotype of what a teacher should be. And again, to me, that means we're a profession, because it's not just about being in the school, in the workplace. We are representing our profession, we are representing our school, we are representing our pupils at all times. It's a bit like when we take kids on a trip, and we say to them, you know, you're in your uniform, so you're going to be on your best behavior because you are representing our school. We are held to those same standards constantly. Constantly. It's not something that you can shake off. You don't stop being a teacher just because it's 4:15 and the bell has gone. And so, again, because we're being held to these standards, because we are being considered professionals, we are expected to be meeting all of these provisos of professionalism. I think it's right that we do consider ourselves a profession. I think it's right that we do call ourselves professionals. But again, I also think it means that we need that professional support. And I think it's okay for us to look at our organizations, both inside and outside of the government, and say, well, actually, I don't believe that you are putting our best interests as professionals at the core of what you do. I think that you should be focused on what we are doing as teachers, on what we need as teachers. I think that you should be to us what we are expected to be to our pupils. We put our pupils' needs first. I think you as our professional body should put our needs first. And quite often, I think that's what we're missing. I think, you know, when we complain about education secretaries, when we complain about Ofsted, when we complain about all of the different things that make us accountable, it's not because we don't want to be accountable. We all believe that we should be. And that comes from this place of wanting to be better. We all want to be the very best teachers we can be. But we need that support as well. It's not enough just to constantly bombard us with what we're doing wrong. You also have to tell us what we're doing right and help us to get it right. And again, I think this is where another body that is independent of the government, that is independent of the unions, I suppose, at this point, that represents the best interests of teachers, that can safeguard teachers, is necessary. So let's kind of break that down a little bit even further, those standards, and let's think about the minutiae of what we are expected to do in order to be considered professional, in order to be treated as professionals. And let's start with a very basic one. Let's start with appearance. What does it look like to be a professional? Schools have dress codes. Schools have dress codes for pupils. Schools have dress codes for staff. I often think, as somebody who was taught both primary and secondary, this was actually harder for me as a primary teacher than it is as a secondary teacher. As a secondary teacher, I know that I wear my shirt, my tie, my jumper, my smart trousers, my shoes all day, every day. That's really easy. When I was primary, it was harder because I had to think about, right, today's PE day, is it okay at the school for me to wear my PE kit all day, or do I need to get changed? If I need to get changed, have I actually got time to get changed at lunchtime before I take them out to do PE? Oh, I've got art tomorrow afternoon, so I need to make sure that I'm not wearing my best shirt because I know that I'm going to get paint on it. There was the time that I was pond dipping with my year five class, and instead of dipping my little net into the pond, I dipped my tie into the pond because I didn't kind of think that through. So it is, I think, much easier as a secondary teacher than it was as a primary teacher, because I've got this one costume. I've got a uniform, I suppose, and I don't particularly need to think about what I'm going to wear day to day. And as my colleagues will tell you, I don't think about what I wear day to day. I pretty much wear the same thing all the time because it's very straightforward. And the idea behind having the dress code for teachers is that we are modeling sensible choices for our pupils. We are showing our pupils what it looks like when they go into the workplace. We are being good role models for them. It also means that we're not being hypocrites. You know, they wear a uniform, so we wear a uniform. But can you be a professional in jeans and a t-shirt? And having taught in many different European countries where dress code for teachers is very different, I'm going to go ahead and say yes. I will be honest, where I've taught in France and I've taught in the Netherlands, where I was kind of expected to just wear like jeans and a jumper to school, I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. I actually quite like wearing my shirt and tie because it helps me to create that difference between Darren and Mr. Lester. Again, it's like back when I was in the West End, putting a costume on turned me into a character. I only ever wear a tie when I go to school. Let me get that sentence around the right way. The only time I wear a tie is when I'm at school. And so I put my tie on, I am Mr. Lester. And that helps. That helps a lot. But I can still be a professional without it. I don't need my tie to be able to speak French. I don't need my tie to understand zones of proximal development. I don't need my tie in order to get out my pink pen and put some ticks against the reading comprehension that the kids did. And this is a much wider issue, I think, of what it is to appear to be something versus what it is to actually be something. And that kind of interplay between aesthetics and existence. You know, what is it to be something deep down? And how does that compare to something on the surface? Because you can put on a shirt and a tie and you can walk into school, but that itself doesn't make you a good teacher. It doesn't make you a professional. It just makes you somebody who got dressed that morning. So I think sometimes we put a lot of emphasis on what it is to look the part rather than what it is to play the part, what it is to be the part. Let's talk about building relationships. Building relationships can be difficult. And as teachers, we have to build relationships with so many people. You know, the hundreds of kids that we teach, the adults who are around us, both our teaching colleagues, but also the administration staff, the cleaners, the janitorial staff, the maintenance staff, the ground staff, everybody. There are so many people within the microcosm of a school that you build relationships with. And it is relatively straightforward to build relationships on the surface. You be proactive, you take an interest in people, you ask questions of people. You do the basic social norms of politesse. You say thank you when somebody helps you to do something. You say hello. You smile when you pass them in the corridor. You are in the tiny kitchen at the kettle and there's a queue behind you. So you line up the cups and you offer to make everybody's cup of tea. You join in with the extracurricular life of the school. You show that you're a team player. All of that is really important. And all of that helps to build those relationships. But none of them have to do with being in the classroom. None of them have to do with your subject. So when we talk about professionalism and when we talk about whether something is a profession, I think it's important to acknowledge the things that we are expected to do outside of the day-to-day of our jobs. And again, I'm not saying that in jobs where we might not consider them to be professions, people get away with being miserable. People get away with not building relationships. But the unpaid labor that exists, that is expected, that is occasionally exploited within professions should also be acknowledged. And whether that is unpaid physical labor, giving up our own time to plan, because if we don't plan a lesson, there will be nothing for us to do when we actually get to work, to mark, to photocopy, you know, all that stuff that happens outside of the time for which we are paid. Professions need that. Because within a profession, quite often, you are only paid for the front-facing stuff. You're not paid for what needs to be done when you are not front-facing. Let's talk about engagement. Because engagement is really interesting when it comes to a profession. And again, you know, talking about the union conference the other day, one of the fair criticisms I saw levied against people like me who had a very strong reaction to how these fringe meetings were being used was, well, if you don't engage with the union outside of, you know, the postal votes that you do and seeing them as a backup, as an insurance policy, does it really matter what you think? So engagement is actually really important. That was a very fair point. That was a very fair point. And it reminds me of this quote that I saw recently. You've got to go wholeheartedly into anything in order to achieve anything worth doing, or worth having. I don't remember the exact wording. But basically, chuck yourself in. You've got to do it properly. If you're going to do it at all, do it properly. And again, when you are in a profession, doing it properly is a huge umbrella. Because you've got the doing it properly when you are in front of the kids. So you have got the getting your facts right or correcting yourself when you realize you got something wrong. Because it happens to all of us. Any teacher who says they haven't accidentally got something wrong in front of a class is lying, as far as I'm concerned. You have got to make sure that your pedagogy is on point. You've got to make sure that you are up to date with the current thinking into the science of learning, into how the brain works. You have got to make sure that you are engaged with the broader life of the school, that you are offering your extracurricular activity, that you are available for sports day. You have got to make sure that your doctor's appointments do not clash with a lesson that you're teaching. You know, all that sort of thing. There is a lot that we have to go into wholeheartedly. And it's hard to do everything wholeheartedly. Because sometimes it's quite natural, I think, to believe that there are some things that are better for other people to do. And I do think that sometimes, you know, for me, there are other people who are better at the pastoral side of teaching than I am. If a pupil wants to talk to me, if a pupil feels comfortable talking to me, then by all means, I will let them. I will follow the safeguarding procedures. I will do all of the right thing because I'm a professional and I make sure that I do what I'm supposed to do. But I don't necessarily believe that I'm the right person to have those conversations with. And yet I still go into those conversations wholeheartedly because it is part of my job, because it is part of my profession. And that can be really tiring when you have to do everything wholeheartedly, when you have to do everything that we are expected to do wholeheartedly. So again, there I'm going to say, yes, we are a profession, because I don't believe that anybody goes into teaching. I don't think anybody remains in teaching without wanting to do everything with the whole of their heart. And I think quite often where we see burnout happening, where we see people leaving the profession because they feel they can't cope with what they're being expected to do, it's because they are doing everything wholeheartedly. Which is not to say that if you're not suffering from burnout, you're not doing everything wholeheartedly. You are clearly just very good at that self-care, that maintenance. But I think, again, if we had a body that was looking out for our own best interests, if we had something that existed specifically to support teachers, then we would find going into these things with the whole of our hearts much, much easier. Let's think about open-mindedness for a second. So this idea was coined by Dewey back in 1933. And it's this idea that you must be open-minded to pretty much everything. When we get external speakers in for INSET, we've got to be open-minded to what they have to say. We might not ever have heard of them before. We might not know about the latest pedagogy that they are touting as being the best thing ever, but we must go into it open-mindedly. Because if we don't, we're not going to learn anything from it. And I do believe that you can always take something from from training, from inset, even if you don't fully agree with what you're being told. This happened to me. We had an inset day back in January at my school. We had an external speaker come in. I didn't like his style. I didn't like what he was saying. His practice and my practice do not gel together at all. But I listened and I engaged because I wanted to try and learn something. I wanted to take something out of the... I can't remember how long he spoke for. It was about 2 hours. And so again, if you are a professional, then you are open-minded and you do try and take something out of every opportunity you are given. I remember full well the day that the idea of hosting one of these shows was floated to me. I was at what at the time was branded Teach Meet, Teacher Icons, and it is now a Teachers Talk event. And I spoke at the MFL one. It was the first time I'd ever spoken at a big event like that. And at the end, again, I remember this vividly, at the end, Tom, who was there because he was running the show and he was doing a sterling job of manning the live feed, he kind of grabbed me as I was leaving, asked whether I would be interested, gave me the details, and then it kind of spiraled from there. I had never ever before that moment considered hosting an educational podcast like this ever. I had when I was younger, and I've shared this story before, I used to play with the girl next door, and we did, this was like the early 90s, we did play radio, and we would use her cassette player to pretend to be radio hosts and create our own show. And, you know, I've been an actor professionally. I've been a singer. I've performed. It's the idea of having an audience wasn't new to me, but it had never occurred to me to try and have a platform like this. And it would have been very easy, I think, to have in that moment laughed Tom off and said, oh, no, I don't think that's for me. But I was open-minded about the idea. I came home. I spoke to some people about it. I researched what Teachers Talk Radio was because, to my shame, I didn't know the platform existed before that moment. And I'm not really sure why I didn't know. I should have known. It should have been on my sphere. But I was open-minded and I went with it. And I thought, you know, even if I only do my couple of trial episodes and that's it, I will have given it a go. And now here I am, almost 3 years later. Because it will be 3 years in June since Tom and I had that conversation, loving every moment of my show. And so because I came into this open-mindedly, I have found something that I have got a real interest in, a real passion for, and, you know, I will be here forever. I will be here every Saturday morning for the rest of my life. And so if you go into something with an open mind, you can get so much more out of it than maybe you ever thought. And that kind of links to, oh, Thomas texted in, good morning, 3 years. I know, it's insane, isn't it? It is actually insane how fast that has gone. But yeah, I remember it very, very well. It links into the old ideas of mindset. We don't tend to talk so much about growth and fixed mindsets anymore. And I've talked about the reasons why on the show to excess. So I'm not going to go into that here. But there is something to be said for the idea of just giving something a go. And that is important in a profession. Otherwise, the profession doesn't move forward. You know, we would still be doing exactly as Socrates did and taking our kids outside, sitting under a tree and asking them questions if we didn't learn and grow as a profession. Not going to lie, some days that sounds like a great idea. I do still think there is something to be said for the idea of Socratic teaching, the idea of teaching through questioning, of building knowledge through forcing answers. But at the same time, we know a lot more about the brain now. We know a lot more about memory. We know a lot more about making connections. And so that's important. And we've got to go into those things with an open mind. We've got to go into those things wholeheartedly in order for our profession to move, in order for any difference to be made at all. So, to kind of answer the question that I started with way back at the top of the show, and there was me worrying that I wouldn't have enough to talk about to fill my 90 minutes, and here we are 80 minutes later, and I have still got like 30 slides on my PowerPoint when I'm attempting to bring it to a close. Yes, we are a profession. I believe wholeheartedly and open-mindedly that teaching is a profession. We do not have all of the trappings of a profession. We have all of the expectations, both of ourselves as practitioners, of each other as teachers, and from the outside world. We are expected to behave as professionals, but we are not always supported as professionals. We are not always respected as professionals. We are not always, our successes are not always celebrated as professional successes. And for me, the more that I think about it and the more that I've talked about it today, another reason that I love the show, you guys all know that I trained as a social constructivist, so I believe that that knowledge is gained through sharing, that knowledge is gained through taking different people's ideas and synthesizing them. And for me, kind of thinking out loud is a really important component of that. So as I've been speaking today, I've kind of clarified a few things for myself. And I think that as professionals, we, I guess, have to wholeheartedly go into this idea of creating the profession, the professional bits that we still need for ourselves. Now, I am not at all conceited enough to believe that I could start some kind of independent body that becomes the professional body of teachers. That's not my place. That's not my place at all. But what I am going to suggest is, where that doesn't necessarily exist for us at the moment, and if you are no longer comfortable with the idea of seeing your union as that professional body because they are bringing their outside interests into that sphere, look to your other communities. Look within your school. Look within those relationships that you are being expected to build because you are a professional, and find that professional body there. Look to your social media presence. Look to your community on Twitter, on LinkedIn, wherever you might be, and find your community there. Look to us here at Teachers Talk Radio and find your community here. You know, there are so many amazing hosts here at TTR. There are so many shows. You know, I look at the schedule every single week to figure out what I can listen to live, what I'm going to listen to on the playback. And I'm just like, when am I going to have time to watch TV? And when am I going to have time to read books? Because there are so many shows that I have to listen to, that I want to listen to, because this is my professional community. And you don't have to be a TTR host, although you can be if you're interested. Then do drop Tom a message, because he is always on the lookout for new hosts. But you don't have to be a host here to be part of this community. You know, I want to give a shout out to all of the friends of the show who are always here, who regularly tune in, not all of whom are teachers. You know, I say that a lot. I know that a lot of my audience here are not teachers. But do look to us as part of your community, to build your community, because that is so important in being a professional. And I think if we are not being given that professional body, if we are not being given that community outside of ourselves, then we do have to create it for ourselves. And we can create it for ourselves. Because we're good at building relationships. It's a trait of professionalism that we have to meet.
This show is brought to you in partnership with John Catt Educational, publishing professional development books and resources to support great teaching and learning in schools around the world. Have you checked out their latest releases? Use the code JCTTR2324 for 20% off your order. Don't miss out. Visit johncattbookshop.com to explore their full range of titles and advance your own professional development today. Happy reading.
So, to bring us to a close, I want to be clear that I am not, and I know that I've said this a couple of times throughout the show, but as my listeners who also have anxiety will be very aware, you know, we do tend to over-explain ourselves, so forgive me for that. I am not belittling the work that the unions do. I am not suggesting that they do not have a place. I am not saying that the politics that was being espoused in that fringe meeting was wrong. Again, I didn't actually get as far as finding out what side they came down on, because that wasn't my objection. I do think that unions do good work. I do think that unions are necessary. If I didn't think that, I probably wouldn't have had such a strong reaction as I had on Thursday evening. So please don't misunderstand. My priority, as always, is making sure that the teaching community is best served, that as teachers we feel that we are in community, that as teachers we feel like we are being supported, and that as teachers we feel like our issues are at the heart of what's being done by the people who say that they represent us. And I guess as a teacher, and as a teacher who has this platform, I have that kind of extra emotional attachment to it, because I have a voice, because I can represent teachers, because I am able to represent teachers, because there are many, many things going on within our profession, and we are a profession that needs to be dealt with. So I'm going to leave you with some advice, maybe a suggestion, maybe a plea, I don't know. Regardless of whether you are back to school this week or not, think about your community. Think about your teaching community. Think about your teacher BFFs, as the memes quite often call them, and think about how you can support them and how you can be supported by them. Think about the community that you are creating. Think about the community that you are building, and make sure that you have that for yourself. As always, thank you ever so much for tuning in today. I love my Saturday mornings with you, and I will be back next week. We have a whole host of amazing shows and spaces being held over the week before I see you again. So please do join in, do tune into some of those, and I will see you next Saturday. Thank you very much, and goodbye.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.